We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We are live on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by Underdog Fantasy and Fantrax. I'm Drew Silva. With me here is Ryan Boyer. It is the afternoon on Sunday, March 19th. We'll continue our category preview series on this episode with strikeouts. And as with home runs, the show we did last Saturday, we don't have to like dig or pretend with this stat, so to speak. The strikeout is usually the best result of a matchup for a pitcher, unless, I know, you can turn a double play or a triple play. But it's a great measurement, simple measurement of true individual talent, individual stuff. The strikeout rate leaders at the end of any season are usually going to be the guys with the best arsenals, the best ways to attack hitters. That goes for starters and relievers. Our focus on this show will mainly be starting pitchers, but you do, of course, get strikeouts from your relievers beyond the primary target or mindset of just wanting saves and ratio help from those relievers. But yeah, most of the analysis for a reliever is whether that person is going to get save opportunities, right or wrong. It's just the way it works in fantasy. Love getting saves and a big strikeout rate from a reliever if you can. Do you have any initial sort of overarching thoughts on the strikeouts category before we hit on some headlines and then getting into these starting pitchers?
Strikeouts as a whole were actually down last year, the first time in, I don't know, 4 or 5 years or something, I think. And after down pretty significantly from the last couple of years, I'm not really sure what exactly to read into that. I wonder if some of the more intelligent pitchers, shall we say, like realized that the ball was not flying as much and them saying, hey, I can pitch to contact a little bit more this year. I don't know. Maybe that's part of it. But I mean, yeah, I mean, strikeouts, as you mentioned, that's one of the better ways to judge a pitcher. That's why we create all these other stats that better predict how a pitcher, like how their results should have gone versus how they actually have gone. And strikeouts weigh a lot into that. I mean, that's totally in the pitcher's control. So I'm glad it's a fantasy stat. And let's talk some strikeouts.
Yeah, and the changes into like the manufacturing of the baseball, which baseball are they using for this game this year? And I mean, you'd hear pitchers complain that the seams weren't high enough off the ball. And you know, that could affect breaking stuff. There's also the sticky stuff thing, which I'm real tired of that storyline, but it seems
apparently,
to pop
yeah,
up.
Yeah, apparently they're going
to
crack down again this year.
Yeah, fun. Hmm. But hey, that's a thing, and it helps you get more spin on your breaking pitches, and that can usually lead to more swings and misses. Let's hit on some headlines before we jump into that. What's the latest like big baseball news from the weekend? I guess the good and bad of the World Baseball Classic. What an awesome event I think it's been so far, but they're was another unfortunate injury there with Jose Altuve.
Yeah. I don't think Mark DeRosa is going to be getting any Christmas cards from Dusty Baker. He seemed like D-Row left Daniel Barden a little too long when he clearly didn't know where the ball was going. Daniel Bard hits Jose Altuve with a pitch. We find out eventually that he has suffered a fractured thumb, and it sounds like it's a displaced fracture. So he's going to need surgery to repair that, which elongates the rehab process even more. I think they're expecting a minimum of 2 months. We've seen 8 to 10 weeks. Really a bummer for people like myself, who has drafted in three real leagues so far that have already at least completed the drafts or in the middle of the draft, where you and I are in one that's ongoing. I think we're going to talk a little bit later, but and I have Altuve, I think, in two of those leagues. So, and I believe I used a third round pick on him for that. So I want to, basically this is me saying I want everybody to feel sorry for me. Yeah, but you know, it's a bummer. Altuve is, he was fantastic last year. Like, the brought the stolen bases back. I mean, his OPS was like in the mid 900s. I mean, he was a legitimately awesome hitter. He's really figured out how to take advantage of those Crawford boxes. And I mean, like I said, the steals came back last year with the new rules in place. If he could keep that going, I think he have a good shot to be a great five category contributor. But now, you know, we're talking about best case scenario, probably June 1st. So yeah, it's a bummer.
Yeah, he'll have that surgery in the coming days, is what the Astros said, after some swelling dissipates. And yeah, I think you could probably rule him out through all of April and May, most likely. Like, probably the best case scenario would be that he returns at like the very end of May. And as you said, a tough situation for fantasy managers like yourself who've already drafted Altuve. Second base is pretty shallow as is. I like him as a target there, or did like him as a target there, just to yeah, fill that hole on your roster and not have to worry about chasing second baseman down the board. He's probably the best option at the position, unless you play in a league where Mookie Betts has eligibility there. Yeah. And now he's down for at least 2 months. David Hensley and Mauricio Dubon seem like the lead candidates to fill in at second base for the Astros. Hensley's like a pretty solid and very well-rounded hitter, gets on base with some speed, not a ton of power yet in that profile. Dubon is more of a defensive option if they go that route. I'm not like real high on either of them for fantasy. And if it's going to be sort of a mixing and matching situation, or the Astros come up with another way to handle that second base absence, you know, playing time would be an issue. Either of those guys really appeal to you? Maybe Hensley in like a real deep league.
Yeah, I would be fine with Hensley in A only, or, you know, deep league. He's, like you mentioned, a pretty solid all around skill set. He hits the ball a ton on the ground and doesn't have a whole lot of power. So I don't know how much you're going to get in that regard. He's kind of a, like, he's listed at like 6'6", 190. He's got like an O'Neill Cruz body type for a middle infielder, but kind of strange. But like you said, it draws a lot of walks. He had a walk rate like over 17% at AAA. I think it was over 14% in the majors last year. So maybe get on base a decent amount. And for that kind of abnormal middle infield build, he does run pretty well. Like 82nd percentile in sprint speed. So maybe a handful of steals, but you know, he's probably going to bat ninth. AL only is fine, but I wouldn't go anything beyond that.
Jeremy Peña could jump to leadoff, maybe. The Astros haven't really come out and said what they're going to do with that, but I think that would make a lot of sense. Maybe Kyle Tucker up there at times. I've been driving the bus for Tucker to get a better lineup, at least a higher lineup spot for a while now. But Dusty Baker likes to put him lower in the order, which I get with the power that he has. But I don't know. I think this is a boost to Peña, who, you know, was fantastic as a rookie last year overall. Had some kind of peaks and valleys, but a really good season for him.
Yeah, and Brantley is going to be not going to be ready quite for opening day too. And Baker has already said that he's going to bat second when he's healthy. So I guess they're going to have those top two spots open, at least initially. So yeah, we'll have to keep an eye on what the Astros do with their lineup there.
Here's a reader question. Is Mookie Betts being listed as a second baseman that much more valuable with Altuve going down? Yeah. I mean, it's valuable when you play, if you play in that kind of league in general. I mean, you're going to get one shot at getting him in a draft. So I don't know how it changes the way you target him necessarily.
And it sounds like he's going to, in leagues where he's not eligible at second base, it sounds like he could gain that eventually. I think David Roberts said he's shooting for like 20 games. So that might take a little while, but you're going to have, you know, most leagues usually 5 or 10 games in season is when they gain that eligibility. So that'll be nice to have. Second base is, like you mentioned, it's kind of a weird position. It's very like there's a handful of really good guys at the top and then some interesting guys late. And then in between, it's just kind of eh. So maybe you can get lucky with one of those guys later on as your Altuve replacement, but you're certainly not going to replace his production either way.
Jurickson Profar signed with the Rockies 1 year's at $7.75 million contract. That was announced on Sunday morning. Makes all the sense in the world. You willed that
into existence, Drew.
Yeah. I mean, it was just an easy one to call. You know, they had holes in the corner outfield and at second base with the injury to Brendan Rodgers. Sean Bouchard goes down. Randall Grichuk's not going to be ready for the start of the season either. There's lingering worry about Chris Bryant, and Profar can help at those spots with a decent bat that, you know, could get elevated as he takes half of his plate appearances at Coors Field. Had a 723 OPS and 658 plate appearances with the Padres last year. 15 homers, 5 steals, and 152 games. You bake in a little more power with the move to Colorado. Maybe a few more swipes with the bigger bases. I wouldn't necessarily count on that with him. Still more of a deep league consideration, if at all. But his outlook has improved with, you know, Denver being the landing spot. Does he get turns at leadoff too? Like, you know, that could obviously help the fantasy output as well.
Yeah, it sounds like they will. I can't remember. Danielle Allentuck, I think, one of the beat writers with the Rockies, tweeted it out that the expectation is that he'll play left field and bat leadoff. It's interesting that, like, Profar, viewed by many, including yourself, is a good fit for the Rockies and potentially other teams because of the versatility, but it sounds like they might do what the Padres did last year and kind of just keep him in left field mostly. Yeah. I know he had like the yips a few years ago. Remember that? So maybe he's not really viewed as a legitimate infielder anymore. Like he didn't play the infield at all for the Padres, I believe, last year.
Right. I mean, so, he's at least an emergency option.
Right. But we can't necessarily count on him gaining eligibility there, I guess. But yeah, you know, going to Denver, if he's going to bat leadoff, you know, do we worry about him signing so late? I don't think so, really, because he was playing for the Netherlands in the WBC, so it's not like he was sitting at home on his couch. So I think he'll probably be fine in that regard. Kind of a boring option, but that boringness gets boosted up by Coors Field. I could definitely see 20 home runs, a good number of runs scored. Maybe, like you mentioned, the steals will go up a little bit, although his sprint speed has been actually really bad the last couple of years. He's somehow only 30 years old still. His debut is more than 10 years ago. Isn't that crazy to think about?
Makes me feel old. Was it him and Oscar Tavares were like the one
two
top prospects in baseball? Mm-hmm. Man, that's sad.
Yeah.
Another interesting storyline is that Braden Shoemake is making a late charge in camp for the starting shortstop gig in Atlanta. That was confirmed by manager Brian Snitker on Saturday. That's interesting, like I said, and kind of surprising. Like, the assumption was that it was going to be Vaughn Grissom's job, probably taking over for Dansby Swanson after Swanson signed that big offseason deal with the Cubs. Grissom, you know, had some legit fantasy buzz and still does, I guess, with at least long term with power and speed. I I don't really see that with Shoemake. I know he's a really good defensive player, and maybe Atlanta feels like the defense is more important at that spot because the offense is kind of deep. Shoemake had a 715 OPS last year at AAA Gwinnett, 7 homers, 9 stolen bases in 76 games. He had a 672 OPS at AA in 2022. I know that Grissom has some flaws, and maybe it comes down to just wanting him to get more development time in the minors. But yeah, this is not like a wonderful turn of events for fantasy interests.
Yeah. I mean, they, like you mentioned, the Braves seemed to really telegraph that they were going to hand the job to Grissom. They didn't really seem to make much of an effort at all to re-sign Dansby Swanson. Grissom worked with Ron Washington, kind of known for his prowess in helping guys up their defense in the middle infield. And he talked up Grissom like he – I forget what the quote was exactly, but he basically said he can do this. It doesn't seem like it's anything that Grissom like hasn't done this spring. Like we haven't read any reports, at least I haven't, about him like looking terrible in the field. I guess it's just Shoemake has been that much better defensively. But like you mentioned, he's not terribly interesting from an offensive standpoint. He's a former first round pick, but the numbers in the minors, not good. Maybe he's just going to be a little kind of a late bloomer, but it does seem like the Braves, if they do go in this direction, that it just picking defense over offense. I actually think that it could, you know, at least from a long-term play, I mean, maybe Grissom's price just gets knocked down so far now that he's actually becomes a nice little value play. I think he could very well, even if he doesn't start the season in the majors, he could still wind up getting the most starts at shortstop for them over the course of the season. So maybe he goes from a, you know, a mid-round play to a late-round dart throw and winds up paying off over the long haul.
All right, we'll get into these strikeout targets now. But first, the fantasy baseball season is underway, and there's no better place to play than Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy baseball. Right now, Underdog has MLB best ball tournaments live, including the Dinger, which has 500 grand in total prizes. In best ball, all you're doing is join a contest, draft your team, and that's it. Set it and forget it. There are no waivers, no trades, and no in-season management. Draft 20 rounds of players. Get the best cumulative scores in your starting lineup, which you set as 3 pitchers, 3 infielders, 3 outfielders, and 1 flex each week of the regular season. Getting started is simple. Go to underdogfantasy.com, sign up with the promo code RWMLB, and not only will Underdog double your initial deposit up to $100, but you'll also get 6 months of our RotoWire subscription for free. Again, that's Underdog Fantasy, promo code RWMLB. Draft your 100K Dinger team today. If you're looking for a place to customize your fantasy league and play a variety of formats, we cannot recommend Fantrax enough. Create the scoring systems that you want to play with. Tweak how waivers work, categories, scoring systems, scheduling. Fantrax offers custom solutions for all of that and more, and it's all free. As you mentioned, Ryan, we're in this slow draft on Fantrax right now. We're into what, round 12, or it just went into round 13. We could talk about some of those picks that we've made so far. I do love being able to just check in on the Fantrax app for a slow draft, or you could just do a standard draft in there. Great interface with the way the draft is presented, the queue, the ability to customize everything that your league would want to customize. Big fan of running all of my drafts on Fantrax. Sign up for free today and be entered to win an official MLB signed jersey from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Simply go to fantrax.com/rotowire and sign up today. That's fantrax.com/rotowire. Fantrax, the home of fantasy sports.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Do you have any takeaways from that draft so far? It's early enough that everyone kind of likes their team, right? It's not that interesting of analysis.
Yeah. So it's a 6x6 league that we're doing, and it's the standard 5x5 categories with OBP and quality starts added. So you get credit for average and on-base percentage as well as wins and quality starts. I mean, I feel like, and it looks by the draft board, looking at your team as well, I mean, you're adding an additional pitching category that relievers have no chance of contributing in. So I feel like it mm-hmm. just pushes their value down. And you and I both waited on closer. I think you took yours in the first one in the 11th round. I actually wish I would have pulled the trigger on Batista, but you got him first. Seems like his stock has fallen so much because of the shoulder and knee thing, but he seems like he's going to be fine now. So I think that could wind up being a really nice value. I took my first closer in round 13, David Bednar. So yeah, you can definitely wait and on saves in that league, but yeah, the Fantrax, site, man, love the interface. It's the best looking one, 10 out of 10, no notes.
I agree. Yeah. And I'm a little bit like, I don't know, OCD when it comes to like design.
Yeah.
Like I think box scores, like remember when Yahoo used to have those great simple box scores and now it's impossible to find a basic box score, which for us as guys who write about like game recaps and I don't want to like wade through a bunch of different stuff to just find what the guy did.
MLB.com has kind of overhauled theirs too. And it's not, it doesn't look good. I don't know why they do that.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't really have any takeaways from that draft. Like you mentioned, the reliever thing, you could probably justify punting saves even, or like just trying to figure it out on the fly.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to, I don't know. I thought like that round 11 to 12 turn was the right time to just grab two, and focus on the rest of what I need in the rounds to come. Like I probably won't take another reliever. I might pick some up along the way as we move into the year. And I like my team so far, but again, we're pretty early on here and the draft board is going to start thinning out a little bit and we'll have to get creative. All right, let's get into it. Sleepers, busts. Yeah, go ahead. Are we going to say something?
No, you go ahead.
let's we've kept the people waiting long enough. Let's get into it. Sleepers, busts, deep league options for strikeouts. The leaders in that category from last year, I'll run through the top 20 real quickly. Obviously, some big names. Gerrit Cole had 257 to lead the way. Corbin Burnes at 243. Carlos Rodon, Aaron Nola, Dylan Cease, Shohei Ohtani, Robbie Ray, Sandy Alcantara, Kevin Gausman, Charlie Morton, Spencer Strider. Those were all the guys, 11 of them, that were above 200 for strikeouts on the year last year. And then you get into Shane Bieber, Yu Darvish, Christian Javier, Shane McClanahan, Framber Valdez, Zach Gallen, Tristan McKenzie, Brandon Woodruff, Justin Verlander, Joe Musgrove to kind of round out the top 20 there. Looking at the betting odds leaders to pace the league in K's this year, you've got Garrett Cole as the favorite. Corbin Burns, Garrett Cole is at plus 550. Corbin Burns is at plus 850. Dylan Cease plus 1,000. Strider is at plus 1,000. Jacob DeGrom plus 1,200. That's kind of interesting. If he's healthy, you know, he could do it. Max Scherzer plus 1,300. Rodon, Nola, Robbie Ray, Shohei Ohtani, Bieber. Hunter Green is an interesting name up there that does not appear on the leaderboard from last year. Just didn't have the workload to get there, but the stuff is impeccable. And then Alcantara, McClanahan, Woodruff, Verlander. You're looking at this list, right? Do you see anyone like in the plus 4,000, plus 5,000 range that is intriguing?
Yeah, I mean, I'll go a little bit less than that. With plus 3,000, Brandon Woodruff. I mean, I know he hasn't had the workload necessary to get up there, but if he throws 200 innings, he could very easily lead the league in strikeouts. So I kind of like that, those odds. I kind of like Max Scherzer at 1,300. I mean, I think it's all about health. If he makes 30-plus starts, he could very easily get up there. As far as the deeper league plays, you know, Zach Wheeler at plus 5,500. Strikeout rate dipped a little bit, but I mean, the stuff seems all the way back, and I think the workload is still going to be big with him. That's kind of an intriguing play. Lucas Giolito, as bad as he was last year, I mean, he still gets a ton of strikeouts. But if I'm being honest, you know, I would be very surprised if the winner does not come from those first handful of guys, which I guess that's why they're given those odds. Makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, Julio Urias, I feel like, has the stuff to do it, but he's a guy that kind of likes to generate ground balls.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Dodgers don't really push their pitchers. You got to think about workload, too. I guess Strider, you know, made a charge to lead the league in strikeouts last year and didn't necessarily have a huge workload.
I mean, he had like almost 100 fewer innings than Sandy Alcantara and had like five fewer strikeouts. I mean, it's not like,
that's,
we're literally like the Cy Young winner. He had, which says more about, I think, Strider than Alcantara, but yeah, just a crazy amount of strikeout upside there if he gets the innings.
Luis Castillo at plus 4,000. We talked about him as like a, or maybe Chris and I did as like a nice AL Cy Young long shot play. Not really a long shot, but I don't know. At plus 4,000, he's got the stuff and the situation there in Seattle to do it. Max Fried plus 6,000. That's about it. There's some other guys on this list, but we're going to be talking about them as we move into these sleepers. All right, you're on the clock, Ryan. Give me your first sleeper in the strikeouts category.
So I'm pretty sure I talked about this guy already on our wins category podcast a couple weeks ago. So I'm obviously all aboard the Reed Detmers hype train. I mean, something that did happen in between that podcast and this podcast, Jeff Fletcher of the Orange County Register had an article talking about Reed Detmers. And I think it was a start against the Dodgers. He was averaging 95 to 97 miles per hour with his fastball, 89 to 91 with his slider. He did have a velocity bump last year around midseason when he had that brief demotion to the minors, but those radar gun readings were even higher than that. Over the winter, he didn't say that he necessarily set out to up his velocity, but he did some training at Driveline, one other training kind of guru guy, and the velocity just automatically went up with him. 2.08 ERA, 0.77 WHIP, and a 17-4 strikeout to walk rate over 13 innings this spring. That 13 start stretch after he came back from the minors last year, he had 78 strikeouts in 71 innings. He's going to be starting on 5 days rest regularly this year, which that's still one extra day of rest than most pitchers get usually. But I mean, the Angels are going to have technically still a six-man rotation this year, but it seems like it's going to be more of like a, that six man's not going to get regular starts, like scheduled starts. It's all going to depend on the schedule. Like if they have an off day, they're just going to skip that sixth spot, and all the other regular five starters are going to be starting on 5 days rest. So, I mean, he could get up to 30 starts potentially this season. I mean, that's going to boost him to what, 30, maybe 40 more strikeouts if we're being optimistic. I mean, that's, yeah. I really like Reed Detmers as just a big breakout play this year.
Yeah, he has looked very impressive this spring. And, you know, I don't love looking at spring training numbers, but, you know, the data points of the fastball velocity spike and even that power slider spiking, it just makes you feel really good about him being a kind of a mid to late round sleeper. And I think his ADP will move up a bit because that's what happens this time of year as we're kind of nearing the final stretch of when you could possibly fit in a fantasy baseball draft. There's some groupthink that gets involved there, but I think he's always had some intriguing talent, and maybe this is the year where he puts it all together. Michael Kopech for me is my first sleeper. 2022 was supposed to be the big breakout year for Kopech as he moved into a regular starting role with the White Sox after mostly working in relief and being injured in the years before then. And he did perform well overall, a 3.54 ERA, 1.19 whip, 105 strikeouts in 25 starts, covering 119 in a third innings. But you look at the K per nine from 2021, it was 13.4, again, primarily in a relief role. And we were hoping that he could carry over that swing and miss with him into a larger starter's workload. Didn't really happen. The K per nine goes from 13.4 to 7.9 last year. The velocity was sort of all over the place from month to month, sometimes even start to start. And the command was rough at times as well. But there was a lingering knee injury. You could see how that might affect his drive off the mound, just sort of diminishing the entire arsenal in that way. Kopech got knee surgery right after the 2020 season. He's healthy now in White Sox camp and looking really sharp too. As of this recording, zero earned runs allowed through two Cactus League starts. He's focusing on throwing more changeups to pair with that fastball that can sit high 90s when everything is going right. The slider has always flashed great potential. The control needs to be better so that his swinging strike rate can rebound. That was a problem last year, but you build better health into the projection, and I think you could see it all happen from an ERA and strikeouts standpoint. And he can hopefully be in line for a lot of wins, too, on a White Sox team that disappointed greatly last year, but certainly has a lot of talent all over the roster. Another jump in workload for Kopech, hopefully longer outings. That was also a problem last year, but there's a path here toward him being, I don't know, like the ceiling would be like a top 35 starter, or let's say top 50 more conservatively. And right now on our ADP page at RotoWire, the consensus says he's going outside the top 70 among starting pitching options, like right around Adam Wainwright, who seems to have, you know, have trouble even hitting 88 miles per hour at the moment. I'll take the upside of Kopech over a lot of options that are down in that range of a draft. A very attractive late round addition for me.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what to think of Kopech. Like in TGFBI, I wound up taking him, and to be honest, I didn't feel super great about it. But it was at the point of a draft that, I mean, that's a 15 team. 30 round league. So it gets pretty deep, and like he was one of the guys that still had upside at that point. He, like you said, there's a path to him being a borderline elite starter. He's got to improve that efficiency. He had 6+ innings in just 5 of his final 17 starts last season. 66 strikeouts and 77 and a third innings over that stretch. the control, as you mentioned, a question mark, health, a question mark, but kind of slow played him this spring, but he's looked good since coming back. And it wasn't that long ago that, I mean, he was viewed as arguably the best pitching prospect in baseball. I guess it has been a little while now, but his arm, his arm is still relatively young. Like, he doesn't have that many miles in his arm. So hopefully he's got his legs under him. And like you said, I don't know what the likelihood is, but there is a path to him being like a top 40-ish starter. Yeah. One other guy who has been a top 40-ish starter in the past, Eduardo Rodriguez. I'm kind of throwing 2022 out for him. He was dealing with some off-the-field stuff. It was kind of a bizarre situation that we never really heard the full story about. There was some speculation that we don't really need to get into, but he was away on an injury rehab assignment, and then he took some personal time off, and he just never really got going last year. The strikeouts weren't there at all, but I mean, this is a guy who in 2019 had 213 strikeouts, 544 strikeouts over 490 and two-thirds innings from 2018 to 2021. That's a 10 strikeout rate per nine rate. Between spring training and the World Baseball Classic, he has a 13-1 strikeout to walk rate over 10 and a third innings so far this spring. So, you know, Eduardo Rodriguez is a guy who's, I feel like we've always kind of been waiting for him to take that next step to be like an ace. But even when he hasn't quite been able to do that, he's still gotten strikeouts at a really nice rate, and he's basically free in drafts now. So I think he's kind of a sneaky guy as a strikeout target late in your draft.
I mean, there was a lot to like about him this time last year. With the draft day cost being essentially free, you know, why not build in things to like about him again? It's a good situation. It was a weird story last year. The Tigers hadn't talked to him and heard from him in a while. Again, we don't really have to get into all that, but he's the same pitcher, right? I mean, he should be good, or at least solid, you know, for what the draft day cost is. I like this reader comment. Took Detmer's 16th round this morning as my starting pitcher 6.
Nice.
I mean, I think that's a good way to build a fantasy rotation with that guy. And we were talking about Detmer's, another intriguing Angel starters, Patrick Sandoval, ADP in the 220 to 230 range at most places. It's kind of amazing that Sandoval managed to post a 2.91 ERA last year when his whip was 1.34. You don't really see that often. You can like see it for relievers where there's a contrast, but you know, over the course of a season, those usually kind of level out. 60 walks, 139 hits allowed, and 148.2 innings. I would expect a good amount of ERA regression if he doesn't take a big step forward with the command, but I also would expect a spike in strikeouts because this stuff is really good. There was that start in 2021 where Sandoval generated 32 whiffs in a single start, and only a few pitchers have ever done that in a major league game. Gerrit Cole had a 32 whiff game that year too, I believe, or maybe it was the end of the year prior, but it doesn't happen often. And Sandoval upped his slider usage to great effect. That's a really nice swing and miss generating delivery for him. The sinker and changeup are really good too. He's got an impressive array of pitches that move. The sinker and changeup are, you know, like you look at the curveball spin too, 87th percentile among all pitchers last year in curve spin. The fastball is not elite, but it can touch the mid 90s and set up his other offerings. Just over a strikeout per inning last year, it was 151 Ks and 148.2 innings. I see that improving. And he's built up now to make the jump to becoming like a 180, 190 inning guy for the Angels in 2023. If he gets that kind of rotation and, you know, they wind up spreading their starters out, we'll see what happens with that. But I don't know, don't draft the ERA thinking it's definitely going to stay in the twos with Sandoval, but the overall package here is promising, especially if he can rein in the control a little bit.
Oh yeah, I'm totally with you on Sandoval. Like you mentioned, the walks have to get down. He's had efficiency issues, but like the changeup in particular is, I mean, it's legitimately like one of the best pitches in baseball. 2022, it had a 44.2% whiff rate. That was actually down from 51.4% in 2021. Just a crazy number. Among pitchers with at least 200 innings since 2021, he ranks 13th out of 114 pitchers in swinging strike rate. So, I mean, that's really, if you look at the swinging strike rate leaderboard, that's a really good indicator of, I mean, it's just littered with all the elite pitchers in the game. Like you can't have a good swinging strike rate and not be a good pitcher. Like you just can't fluke into that. So, I mean, he's been among the elite in the game in that regard. And like I mentioned before with Detmers, he's going to be starting more regularly on 5 days rest. Maybe he can get up to 30 starts as well. And I think he could definitely get to 200 strikeouts if he does that.
Who's next on your sleepers list?
I think you got Hunter Brown, don't you? You want to?
I do have Hunter Brown.
Tell us about Hunter Brown, Drew.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, he seems to be assured now of that final spot in the Astros rotation with Lance McCullers battling another injury, a forearm strain is the diagnosis. He'll be out a while. Brown looked great in his first, MLB cup of coffee last year, a 0.89 ERA, 22 strikeouts in 20.1 innings. Then he was carried in the postseason bullpen for Houston and worked 3.2 scoreless frames. High 90s heat, nasty breaking stuff. Another exciting young player for the defending World Series champions there. He was a fifth-round pick in the 2019 draft out of Wayne State University. Posted really good strikeout rates in the lower minors and then broke through into the top prospect mix last summer at AAA with a 2.55 ERA, 1.09 whip, and 134 strikeouts in 106 innings before then making his way up to Houston in September. The improvement in his command last year was the biggest thing, and it's what you're encouraged about moving forward. And his ADP is a little out of whack because it looked like he might be a target for a relief roll out of the gate in 2023 or to possibly just head back to AAA for a bit. But here we are now in late March with Brown looking secure and a starting job for obviously one of the better teams in baseball, even without Jose Altuve. The current ADP shows him outside the top 200, but he will should go inside the top 200 in most drafts that are going to be taking place over the next week plus steering into opening day. I think he's a big talent and he's starting to really find it, and he could be pretty special. Like the Astros need more great players.
Yeah, I mean, you look at just watching him live, the stuff definitely really pops. I am going to be interested to see how much of that control improvement, at least he showed at the major league level, is going to stick, because he's been wild this spring. 4.4 walks per nine in the minors, just 6+ innings and 4 starts in the minors in 2022. He just spent a little bit of time in relief, so he didn't make a ton of starts, but I mean, he's kind of he modeled his delivery off of Justin Verlander. If you look at the side by side, I think Pitching Ninja has done that split screen before. They have it's kind of like the Charlie Morton, Roy Halladay thing from a few years ago. They kind of patterned his delivery off of his pitching hero and got to share a rotation spot with him a little bit last year. It's pretty cool. But unfortunately, I'm not sure that the control is Verlander-esque. Maybe it'll get there. But yeah, from a strikeouts perspective, I could definitely see the upside for Hunter Brown. Hopefully that command and control will take a step forward.
I wouldn't expect Verlander-esque type stuff, but
yeah,
like even long-term, but I think he's going to be pretty good.
Sure. And get into some deep league targets.
Let's do it.
Yeah. One of my, JT Brubaker, I feel like he's been kind of always a tweak or two away from a breakout and just hasn't quite gotten there. Consistencies, like he'll go through these stretches where he just does really, really well, piles up the strikeouts with a good ERA, but then he'll hit a rut for a while and the numbers by the end of the year just don't look great. He's had home run problems. That's a big part of that. But, you know, he does have more than a strikeout per inning during his career. This spring in 12 and a third innings, he's got a 20-3 strikeout to walk rate. You know, I think he's not like a super sexy high ceiling pick. Obviously, from a wins perspective on the Pirates, there's not much upside there. But I do think from a strikeouts perspective, he could have enough of a workload. And if he can get up to close to 10 K per nine, that's kind of a sneaky 100 to 200 strikeouts kind of guy you could get late in your draft. I think there's a little bit of an appeal there with JT Brubaker.
I like this comment. Interesting to hear you mention these three: Detmers, Brown, Sandoval. I like it. He broke into our shared Google Doc and found our notes for this show. I'm going to throw Jared Schuster out there as a deep league option, and you know, we'll see how that final spot in Atlanta's rotation gets sorted out. But Ian Anderson was already optioned to AAA, and Schuster is battling for it with Dylan Dodd, two good young left-handed options there for an organization that keeps pumping them out on the offensive side and the pitching side. You want to keep an eye on Dodd too, in case he does win this thing. But most of the beat writers that cover this team seem to think that Schuster right now is the front runner. He's making a heck of a case in Grapefruit League play, a 0.71 ERA, 16 strikeouts, only two walks through 12.2 innings of exhibition action so far. He has 235 strikeouts and 212 and a third career innings in the minor leagues. Posted a 3.29 ERA, 1.05 WHIP, and 145 Ks in 139 innings last year between AA and AAA, mostly doing that at age 23. Kyle Wright is working through a shoulder issue in camp, too. We should make note of that. So maybe Schuster and Dodd both get starts early on, and the competition for that number five spot sort of leaks into the regular season. There are other options as well. Like, I don't know if Ian Anderson can get back to his 2020, 2021 form. Michael Soroka is going to, I think, return eventually. So you build that risk into everything that the spot might not be super secure. And, you know, Schuster, Dodd might be someone you have to drop at some point if they get sent back down, or one of them gets shifted into relief or just doesn't make the opening day roster in Atlanta in Dodd or Schuster's case. The ADP has obviously risen sharply since Ian Anderson got demoted and Brian Snitker came out and kind of hinted that it's going to be either Schuster or Dodd out of the gate. Still going in the later rounds, though, or not at all in shallower formats. I think it's a good upside gamble on Schuster or Dodd if either of those guys are sitting on the draft board, you know, toward the end, in the closing rounds of your league.
Yeah, former first-round pick Schuster is. I think he's generally, scouts see him as more of like a high floor guy than a ceiling guy. But I mean, that doesn't mean that his strikeouts can't be at a pretty high rate. I think, you know, he did struggle a little bit at AAA after being promoted last year. His strikeout rate was just 7.2 per nine. But I think, I don't know if you've seen like him pitch at all this spring or seen any clips or anything, but he's got like this kind of unique delivery. He really hides the ball well behind his, like, it basically comes out of his back. I feel like that could be difficult to pick up, especially initially. I could see him getting off to a really good start, like the first time he lineups see him. You know, maybe they make an adjustment eventually, but, you know, Schuster definitely, for his late of an ADP, as you've mentioned, is definitely an intriguing guy. Another guy that is going very late in drafts, coming over from Japan this year, Shintaro Fujinama. I mean, just from an Arsenal perspective, like, he's absolutely filthy. Eno Saris, you know, he has this stuff plus metric that kind of he came up with, which is on Fangraphs now, by the way. So it's a pretty cool thing to look at. by, you know, not all of these parks have the software or whatever up, the TrackMan or whatever up in their ballparks to be able to track all of this stuff. But for the ones that do, registered by Stuff Plus, he ranks 8th this so far this spring. 99 mile per hour fastball, the splitter. If you've seen any of the Pitching Ninja GIFs, you say GIFs or GIFs? I know that's a real, that's a thing that's can start fights on the.
I was a proponent of GIFs for a long time, but I found myself saying GIFs now. Maybe it's just easier on the.
I feel like the person who originated it came out and said GIFs, which is almost the opposite of what most people were saying. Anyway,
because the
I digress.
G in it stands for graphic.
Yeah.
I don't know. Whatever. Yeah. Let's move on.
Anyway, back to Fujinama. So as far as stuff goes, like, I mean, it definitely plays, but the reason why he had to settle for like a pretty modest 1-year deal with the Athletics, the command and the control both are really bad. He's been kind of hit or miss this spring. He's piled up a bunch of strikeouts. So that's part of the reason why I list him in this deep sleeper section here. But I mean, he didn't really dominate in Japan. You know, the strikeout rate was good, not great. Something to keep in mind there, though, is like their emphasis on, you know, making contact in Japan is way higher than it is here. So you often see pitchers with good, not great strikeout rates in Japan. They can kind of up that a little more in the States if everything works out. But I think it's all going to be about him being able to throw enough strikes and pitch deep enough into games to be able to take advantage of that good stuff. But I mean, again, he's basically free from an ADP perspective. So I think he's a fine late round dart throw.
You talked about JT Brubaker. Ronzi Contreras is intriguing as well. Just had a really strong turn with the Dominican Republic in the World Baseball Classic. I think it was on Tuesday against Israel. He had 4 Ks over 2.2 innings, no walks, just one single allowed through 28 of his 41 pitches for strikes. Not that Israel has a daunting or had a daunting lineup to navigate, but good to see Contreras thrive in that kind of high-pressure, high-emotion environment at age 23. Now he's back in Pirates camp and likely to open as the number 2 or number 3 starter for Pittsburgh. 3.67 ERA, 90 strikeouts through his first 98 major league innings. He debuted in late 2021, made one start that year. His four-seam fastball was hit hard at times in 2022, but it should be a better pitch for him moving forward. It touches the high 90s with movement. Like, it kind of passes the eye test. The slider has a lot of movement. The curveball is a good out-generating pitch, too. He's reworked his changeup as well and had success throwing that pitch in the World Baseball Classic. I like the arsenal. I like the poise. It can feel uninspiring to click the name of a Pirates pitcher in a fantasy draft. You're probably not going to get many wins, as you said, with Brubaker. But the workload is building, and Contreras has the talent to make a sizable leap in 2023. ADP in the mid to high 300s, so basically free in a standard draft. And you can consider him a streamer if you like, kind of play by ear with him. Matt Brash is another guy, and this is going to all come down to roll. And right now, I don't think Brash can be projected to crack the rotation in Seattle. Luis Castillo, Logan Gilbert, Robbie Ray, George Kirby, and then sort of the same Marco Gonzalez, Chris Flexen battle for that number 5 spot, maybe. But Bryce Miller, Easton McGee, Emerson Hancock, Taylor Dollard are other options to emerge in that Mariners organization as well. So it's going to take a real push from Brash to actually get starts. He has been stretched out, throwing longer relief outings this spring. And I don't know, maybe the most likely outcome is that he does just work in mid to long relief, which is obviously not going to do much for a fantasy manager, but the raw stuff is crazy. And, you know, very heavy on inducing swing and misses. 62 strikeouts over his first 50 major league innings last year. He had a really good debut in a starting role last April on the road against the White Sox. 6 strikeouts over 5 2/3 innings, only one walk. A few more rotation turns came after that before Brash got moved to the bullpen, largely because the command was getting ugly and exposing him, you know, to some crooked number type of innings. But you look at the minor league numbers, like I feel like I've just made a case to not draft him. But you look at the minor league numbers, a 2.52 ERA, 191 strikeouts, and 128 and two-third frames on the farm. That's for his career in the minor leagues. 191 strikeouts and 128 innings. I don't know. Maybe the Mariners like trade Brash because they do have a nice store of pitching depth. And I'd be a little worried, and maybe they'd be a little worried about his development getting stunted in the bullpen, but they do probably also consider him a possible future star in high leverage if he can rein in some of that command and, you know, keep the effectiveness of his breaking stuff. It's just worth keeping an eye on because there's so much upside in the arsenal, truly some of the best breaking pitches in the sport. But you do have to squint a bit to see how he offers steady fantasy production going into his age 25 season. 24 right now, turns 25 in May.
Yeah, this time last year, I feel like Brash might have been the guy we saw more than anybody else on the Pitching Ninja account. Like that slider is just a devastating pitch when it's on. He is able to spot the fastball high in the zone at like 99 miles per hour when things are going right. But, you know, like you mentioned, the current control and command has just been really bad. That's why the Mariners were so quick to shift him into a relief role. But, you know, as you mentioned, you know, the back end of that rotation, not exactly settled. Maybe I'm not counting on him getting more starts, but maybe he could be like a multi-inning reliever. And as long as he pitches, he's going to get strikeouts. I have no doubt about that. And especially for like maybe in a league where you are using those SP and RP spots, he could have eligibility for both of those. So maybe that's handy to have. Still could be some untapped upside with Matt Brash. And plus, you know, the Mariners, Scott Servais has not been one to anoint closers. So, you know, maybe he works his way into saves. It's a possibility. What about fades for you, Drew? What are you, who are you kind of shying away from a strikeouts perspective?
Well, I mean, like the names that come to mind are like, I don't know, like Freddie Peralta, Jacob DeGrom. That's the risk averse stuff, like the injury risk guys.
Yeah.
You kind of know what you're getting into there when you click those names. If health is not an issue, you're sitting pretty. I wonder about Max Scherzer too. You know, we talked about him as, you know, he maybe could lead the league in strikeouts, but there've been a number of like physical setbacks that have built up in recent years with him. He turns 39 years old this July. Is this maybe finally the season where his body is barking at him too much as he's barking at other people? But again, you know what you're getting into when you make these pitchers an early round pick, and you know, every pitcher carries some level of health uncertainty. It's not the most high level analysis there, but you know, just guys that you're a little bit cautious when you're clicking their names in any draft.
Yeah. I mean, if you're talking about, if you're talking about fades for a strikeout perspective, like, I mean, you have to pick the guys in this range. Otherwise it doesn't really make sense. Yeah. So right. It's going to be the guys that you have health concerns about. Another guy I have potential health concerns about is Shane McClanahan. I mean, he's looked great so far this spring. It's been a good indicator that that shoulder is feeling good right now, but he did have shoulder issues down the stretch last year, struggled down the stretch. Strikeout rate by month last year for Shane McClanahan, 14.0 per nine. Whew, that's nice. 11.2 per nine, 11.5, 10.3, 8.5, 5.7. So we saw as those innings piled up and that shoulder started to kind of bark that the strikeouts went down, the overall numbers went down. You know, he looks, like I mentioned, he looks healthy this spring. That's his ADP has been fine, you know, but still have in the back of my mind that shoulder could be an issue at some point down the line. So, you know, if you're talking about a guy that's going this high in drafts who could potentially be a disappointment, if you're expecting 200 plus strikeouts, I'm going to go with a guy that's might not be able to make all of his starts. and that's Shane McClanahan. So any more for you, Drew?
I'll go with Tristan McKenzie as more of like a traditional bust potential arm, or you know, one that's at least worth analyzing, since I wasn't breaking any ground saying you got to be careful about DeGrom and Peralta and aging aces. McKenzie's going top 100 overall, even top 90 in some leagues, after he put up a 2.96 ERA, 0.95 whip, and 190 strikeouts over 191 and a third innings last year for the Guardians. Fully arrived with that stat line. It was a great season, and it's going to look good in any fantasy draft user interface when you pull up that name and see those numbers and maybe what he's projected to do this year. But there was a lot of luck involved in that stat line. If you want to poke those holes, like BABIP, left on base percentage, hit luck, his hard contact rate was high, even though he didn't get dinged for it all that often. I like Tristan McKenzie. I think he could be really solid, but the stuff isn't necessarily elite. Like he outperformed a lot of what the metrics were saying about his pitch mix last year. I'd be cautious about drafting the numbers from last year and looking at his age and thinking you're going to get more of the same or even better, like that he has another step that he could hit. Zach Gallen and Robbie Ray are going in McKenzie's range right now, current ADP readings. I think we'd both prefer Gallen or Ray to McKenzie. I don't want to speak for you. Logan Webb just behind him on the ADP charts as well. I think I'd prefer Webb. There's some top 25, top 30 starters that I like better and that I trust them to deliver strikeouts for me and probably ERA for me as well, more than I like McKenzie.
Yeah, it's interesting with him. Like, he struck out way more guys in 2021, but he also walked way more guys. The slider velocity was actually up last year, but the whiff rate went from 44.2% in 2021 all the way down to 27.2% in 2022. Batters went from hitting 132 versus that slider to hitting 268. So maybe he just made the sacrifice as far as getting batters to chase in an effort to throw more strikes, and he's putting it in the zone more, and he's more willing to, which, I mean, it worked. He was a more effective pitcher overall, but that might mean fewer strikeouts. So, you know, just keep that in mind when you're thinking about drafting Tristan McKenzie. Another guy for me, I feel like I'm kind of picking on George Kirby because I listed him as a fade in Chris and I's whip podcast, which I actually think he's going to be fine to whip because that control is just so immaculate. But I just kind of feel like George Kirby is like a kind of a collection of good but not great stuff who just gets great results because he has such elite command and control. And I think he's going to be a perfectly fine starter and effective pitcher, but I just don't know if the strikeout rate upside is there. None of his secondary pitches had a whiff rate above 14%. I mean, that's just, especially for secondary pitches, that's just really not good. So I don't know. I could see him being like a 350 ERA, 105 whip, which is great, but I could also see him like only striking out, you know, 8 per 9, something like that, which is going to be fine. Like I said, I think he's going to be a perfectly effective pitcher, but I think the strikeouts have the potential to be a disappointment with him.
All right. I think we did it. That'll be it for us. Thanks for tuning into the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast brought to you by Underdog Fantasy and Fantrax. Hopefully we shed some light on ways to attack the strikeouts category, some sleepers among starting pitchers. If not, yell at us on Twitter. I'm at Drew Silve. Ryan is at Ryan P. Boyer. Stay tuned for more episodes. We got one every day of the week now. And peace out.